mechanical problem.
Okay. Am I hearing correctly? The panel endorses the amendments. I was trying to glean that from your... Is that correct? Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Well, let's let Steve, and then we'll go to Senator Ringo.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, if I had not been specifically prohibited to do so by the chair, I might have mentioned that one budget that this legislature has not yet cut is the $300 million biennial budget for payments to video poker taverns. Mm-hmm. But I was specifically prohibited from mentioning that by the chair.
Thank you for not doing that.
Yeah, I appreciate you not, mentioning that. Senator Ringo.
Thank you. I'm sorry for missing your testimony, Harvey. Are you speaking on behalf of Associated Oregon Industries? Are they, as a group, endorsing this?
Yes, sir, Representative Ringo. Okay. Senator Ringo.
Thank you. All representatives. We were all there, except for Senator Ferry only. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Ms. Stevens, Mr. Williams... I don't think. Do you want to testify? Do you want to come up here? We might drag you
away or anything. You're fine. Get your cup of coffee. Okay.
Ms. Stevens, Ms. Williams, Ms. Rommel. And Ms. Swimmer Whalen, you're next. Yeah, she's in about 5 minutes.
She's on deck, Mr. Chair?
She is on deck. She is, please.
Can we put the baseball alliterations around here?
Who's in the hole?
Technically, I'd be on deck. The rest of the she'd be in the hole.
Please. No, David, you're up here testifying.
Please begin. Please.
Okay, I guess I'll be at that first. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and Representative Hobson. David Williams, representing the Oregon School Employees Association. Just here to lend our voice to the chorus of support for the amendments to SJR 30. We applaud the very thorough effort that Representative Merkley has brought to thinking outside the box when it comes to school funding and coming up with an idea that probably not many people have seen and is, frankly, very innovative in trying to ensure that future legislative assemblies will be sort of bound to a stricture of school funding within a floor and ceiling scenario. We also appreciate that this piece of legislation continues to highlight the quality ed model. The Oregon School Employees Association fully supports the work of the Quality Ed Commission and those who helped develop the model, and like at every opportunity to highlight the well-thought-out job that the QEM does in defining what it costs to fund schools. Our one concern with any sort of situation that applies a floor to school funding is that that floor will, in effect, become a cap, a ceiling, if you will, and we appreciate that this bill helps to sort of define the outside goalpost with a ceiling with the quality ed model. But thank you very much.
Goalposts and ceilings are mixed metaphors.
And we're batting, too.
Well, that's right.
Maybe we can get cricket in here as well.
Play ball.
Chair Deckard, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Stevens, and I represent SEIU Local 503, Oregon Public Employees Union, which has about 40,000 members statewide. And while we don't represent employees in K-12, we do feel that a strong educational system is vital for Oregon. Significantly, many of our members have children in Oregon public schools, and further, we believe that jobs and economic development are dependent upon adequately funded schools. We believe there should be floor spending for all the vital public services, for example, in healthcare, human services, transportation, and public safety. And we do have some questions about the implementation of this proposal, but we are generally supportive of this measure because of the clear need to adequately fund education. What is certainly needed in Oregon is revenue to fund these services so we don't end up pitting one against the other. And we could begin to do this by reducing less effective and less essential tax expenditures. We also want to thank Representative Merkley for his work in this initiative and for bringing an organization that is not normally involved in K-12 budgets to the table. Thank you.
Good afternoon. I'm Barbara Rommel, superintendent of David Douglas School District, and I have felt like I've been in the hole for much of this school year. I presented some written testimony, and rather than read that, I'd like to add a couple of comments. One is that as we started to put together our budget this year, we held a number of community meetings because we were looking at a reduction of about $3 million, and we wanted community input on what those reductions should be. And those meetings were very well attended by citizens in our community, and they had a lot of emotion attached to them because they were looking at reducing some things that were very precious to them. One of the things that came out in several of those community meetings was a question about, well, if the state per student amount has been reduced this year, how low can it go? Where will it stop? And the answer to that was, well, it just depends on how much of a hit the economy takes. And the members of the community were very surprised to hear that. And I think that if you should see clear to support this bill, I think that when it went to the voters, you would see a really strong degree of support from the average person on having this level of stability for their education system. And the second piece to that is, as you are, I'm sure, all well aware, things seem to go in kind of a circle, and you never know where making an impact one place will have a reaction in another place. And recently in the Portland area, there's been a commercial on television advertising a housing community in Clark County. And part of that commercial says, you can have stable schools you can be proud of if you move to Washington State. And I hope that we don't see the concern with our school funding have a backlash to losing employees and taxpayers to a close-by state because they have a guaranteed amount for their school funds. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Corcoran.
Do you know how Washington funds their schools?
Yes. Sales tax and mostly sales tax.
Business not taxes. Mm-hmm. A little bit more stable than income.
But they also, it's my understanding that they also have a fund education first priority as part of their and I don't.
We had a defund education priority, I mean, in the sense that we cut human services by 30% and cut education by 12, or cut K-12 by 12, I think were the numbers. So kind of did it in the reverse.
Mm-hmm. Any other questions?
I'll get into the perception.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your testimony. Ms. Lori Wimmer-Whalen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee members. For the record, Lori Wimmer-Whalen with the Oregon Education Association, also here to lend our support to the amendments to the resolution before you. OEA's first priority is to raise revenues adequate to funding schools sufficiently so that our inputs match our expected educational outputs. And I think everybody has said that in one way or another today. And that means revenue reform. But having said that, we can talk about the revenue on one side of the equation, that's income, and we can talk about budgeting on the other side of the equation, that's outgo. We see value in defining parameters for education funding for the sake of stability as a secondary priority. We believe that in this building, budget numbers are talked about for K-12, both in terms of the ideal, the quality education model, and in terms of the CSL, although that has been obviously diminished in value this session. And we have, quite frankly, a floor already, but it's a political floor. And we believe that the political number is too low. We believe that, therefore, policy-driven expectations of education don't match our investment, particularly in down cycles. In times of shortfall, though the business cycles may be temporary, I'd point out to you that the cuts that are made that are, as we have been made clear to us this session, are going to be perceived of as permanent. We immortalize those cuts because in future biennia, as we roll out of these hard times, those cuts become part of the base because they are perceived of not as temporary cuts but of as permanent cuts, and that downgrades your base in perpetuity. Now, making the QEM more significant, therefore, becomes a priority for us. And by constitutionalizing the QEM by reference in this language, we believe that would be significantly helpful because right now we think it's not regarded highly enough as a part of the determination of what the number should be for adequacy's sake. We had, when we first saw this idea and some early draft language, some concerns. And some of them are concerns that have been mentioned by all of you. Chiefly among them, we didn't want just a floor. We wanted a ceiling mentioned in the resolution specifically because we felt that without that, the floor would become the ceiling. And frankly, that's just our cynicism probably showing. But we also felt that we didn't want K-12 pitted against other vital programs in the state. That was a very clear priority for us as we work with our allies on trying to raise adequate revenues to fill the hole. And also because our members feel that it's hard to teach a hungry child. Let's be honest, that's an issue that does spill over to education, whether it's in a budget column or not. So assuming that we ever capitalize a reserve fund, we were very glad to see that the linkage to a reserve fund be a part of this concept so that when we're in a down cycle, that's presumably when the floor would kick in, it would only pass if it were linked to an adequate stabilization fund. Adequate may be an overestimate. I think the point was well made that even if we'd had the SGR2 in play, that's maybe 10% of a general fund plus the Educational Stability Fund. If we ever quit rating it and it actually can be capitalized, that'd be another 5% of the general fund. We'd have 15% in theory in reserves in a decade or two, whenever the next down cycle comes, to tap, which in theory would at least mean that we wouldn't have to parasitize other programs in order to meet the demands of the floor. It was stated earlier, and I'm sorry Senator Ferrioli isn't here for this, I'd like to correct the record on one thing. The comment was made that we already have parameters, that the School Revenue Forecast Committee sets the floor and the QEM sets the ceiling. And I guess I would just push back on that just a little bit because I also served on that on behalf of the Oregon Education Association for the last two interims. And what the School Revenue Forecast Committee does is simply determine what number would be considered a current service level number and provides that information to school districts and to the legislature. But it has been made abundantly clear to us that that is not, I mean, I would love for that to be the playbook from which the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means is currently operating, but it is simply not. So to say that that's the floor is just not factual. It's not even being factored in as these budgets are going forward for K-12 in this current biennium. So I would, as I mentioned, say that having a constitutionally set floor rather than a politically set floor would be an improvement from our perspective. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for Laura? See none. Anyone else wish to testify? That completes our sign-up sheet on this measure. I don't see anyone picking up. I appreciate the public hearing and the testimony. That was a good discussion. We will close the public hearing on SGR 30. And we are going to next go into a public hearing on House Bill 2217. We will in a minute.
The amendment, sir.
I'll be back.
Okay. We will open a public hearing on HB 2217.
Are we going to move that thing?
If Senator Cannon comes down, which I think he will.
Okay.
Greg Delpani, Dean Wilkinson, and Bob Russell can come up. We'll have our staff tell us a little bit about the bill.
Chair Starr, members of the committee, Dick Yates with Legislative Revenue. Included in your materials is a little chart, which I thought, since we're Revenue Committee, maybe a little more general description of what the bill does would be in order.
Okay.
What I've done is to simply outline Chapter 825 there on the left-hand side and all of the sections that are involved in it dealing with motor carriers and regulations, basically, with respect to their activities. And highlighted, too, the safety regulations and penalties. And then on the right-hand side, we have sort of a summary of what the bill does. In Section 1 of the bill, it amends 825.017, which deals with non-applicability. What you have at the beginning of the chapter is a number of a very large number of vehicle classes which are not subject to the chapter. And so it says they're not vehicles in these classes are not the provisions of the chapter do not apply to those. And what the bill does is to amend several of those. In Section 13, it amends provisions saying that the Chapter 825 does not apply to U.S. To vehicles carrying U.S. mail. In 17, it says vehicles operated prior to being placed in commercial service. And in Section 20, again, you're deleting vehicles greater than 12,000 pounds, which are for private transportation of persons. In 21A, you're deleting driver vehicles driven by a licensed chauffeur. And in Section 22, vehicles over 15,000 for transportation of an individual's own fishing boat. And in 23, again, vehicles used for forest protection and fire, or forest protection and fire suppression, that's supposed to read. And of those, the highlighted ones there are then recovered or partially covered later in the bill. In the new Section 4, where it says not all of the provisions of Chapter 825, but only those that I've highlighted, those relating to safety and those relating to penalties, are those vehicles exempt of them. Then in Chapter 825.024, it deals with applicability to farm vehicles. And again, they're... it becomes that these provisions become applicable to farm vehicles only if they're operated in interstate commerce.
Yeah.
Then moving to Chapter 811, there's a requirement essentially for seat belts to be worn, and again exemptions from that, and this exempts motor carriers in interstate commerce. Then dealing with high-risk vehicles, primarily vehicles carrying hazardous materials, again, they're exempted from having to stop at a railroad crossing where there is a gate. So that's what this bill is doing. It does carry an emergency clause and takes effect upon passage.
Thank you very much, Mr. Yates. Who'd like to start? Greg.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, for the record, I'm Greg Delpani. I'm the administrator for the Motor Carrier Division of ODOT. House Bill 2217 has to do with making revisions to Oregon revised statutes that are necessary to retain Oregon's eligibility to receive certain federal funds known as MCSAP or Motor Carrier Safety Assistance Program grant funds. Oregon has received these federal grant dollars continuously since the mid-1980s. In the course of a regularly occurring audit in March of 2000, officials of USDOT made a determination that Oregon revised statutes contained some provisions, these provisions that Dr. Yates just referred to, that were both incompatible with federal grant guidelines, eligibility guidelines, and also, if unamended, subject to federal preemption. Oregon receives currently $4.8 million per biennium in the MCSAP grant. If the passage of House Bill 2217 does not occur, those are the grant dollars that we risk losing as a state. Of all of the incompatibilities that were just listed for you, certainly the only one that received any appreciable conversation is the elimination that farm vehicles currently enjoy from safety regulation. There was a great deal of discussion in the House Transportation Committee from members of the farm community with regard to the potential loss of their currently existing farm safety exemptions. Farmers are reasonably concerned about the potential loss of that safety exemption, and their concern is simply that in the face of a compressed period of time during the harvest season that they have to move their goods from field to manufacturing, they were rightfully concerned that perhaps their vehicles would be interrupted and the efficient and timely harvest of their crops would be interfered with. However, in my opinion, I think there's really no reason for concern because in Oregon, the safety program that we administer is performance-based. And by that I mean it is governed by an evaluation and an analysis of objective safety data, truck accident data. And based on that data, we make our determinations about where and how to deploy the limited resources we have to attend to the business of safety regulation in the state. And on that basis, there simply isn't any reason to be concerned that we would choose to focus additional safety regulatory scrutiny on farm vehicles, because that objective safety data that I mentioned shows us that farm vehicles just simply do not come onto the radar screen. They are not significantly represented in truck accidents or in vehicle deaths. Therefore, we would not warrant investing any additional regulatory scrutiny if we have the authority to do so by virtue of the passage of 2217. As a matter of course, since the early 1980s, ODOT has prepared a commercial vehicle safety plan, which has examined the data and has directed our efforts. The A engrossed version of House Bill 2217 memorializes that commercial vehicle safety plan and directs the department in statute to continue to produce it. The -3 amendments to the bill take this one step further, and they suggest that all law enforcement agencies within the state should follow the general guidance contained in the commercial vehicle safety plan that ODOT will prepare and use it to direct their efforts.
You read that, 44 to 12?
Yes, sir.
That was the vote over in the other chamber?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And with that, I'll conclude my remarks. I'd be happy to answer any of the questions you have.
Who else would like to go first?
Hi, my name is Jean Wilkinson, representing the Oregon Farm Bureau. I'll try to make my comments brief as well.
Good.
Of course, this bill will remove a protection farmers have had for the last 25 years. Farmers under this protection have been able to use farm trucks on a seasonal basis, short periods of time, on secondary roads, which is what happens in the farm community for the most part. When this exemption goes away, farmers may have to add equipment to their trucks to bring them into compliance with federal regulations, and farmers are concerned about that. They wonder why this is necessary since, as Greg commented, they account for less than 1% of the accidents in the state. The farming community does not support this bill. We adamantly opposed it on the House side. However, we in those discussions, we recognize that there's a monetary issue at stake and that the legislature over there on the House side decided that the bill needed to move. We, the Cattlemen's Association, Farm Bureau, and the Wheat League have accepted that decision. From conversations with a few of the senators, if you could bear with me, you know, this is an important issue to the farm community, so I'll wrap it up in a few seconds here. We accept that decision, and I get the impression that the same decision will be made on the Senate side. If the again, we oppose the bill. If the committee is so inclined to pass this bill out, we would like to see the -A3 amendments adopted by this committee. This gives us some assurance that inspections are done in accordance with a global perspective and a thoughtful, organized process. And hopefully that process will take into account the fact that farm trucks aren't causing the accidents in the state. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to try to answer them. Thank you.
Mr.
Yes.
The A3 amendments, what is so reassuring with these amendments that is different than the bill? Let me ask you that. As you said, it gives the Farm Bureau and the cattlemen and the wheat growers some comfort in knowing that if the bill passes, mm-hmm. that this section would be there. What does this section do?
Mm-hmm.
I looked at it real quickly, and uh-huh. I don't have the statute in front of me, so I don't know what it relates to. It relates to a different statute.
Okay. Well, I'll just give you my impression. Maybe Greg Delpani can offer something else, Senator Hannon. As far as we know, from what we've learned about the safety plan that is conducted and made up by Oregon Department of Transportation under the guidance of Greg Delpani, they look at the where in the state and what trucks have been causing the accidents in the state, and they prioritize where inspections should be conducted based on that statistical information. And so they, as far as I know, they plan where inspections should take place over the next year or two, and try to prioritize things to best utilize the funds. Now, this amendment I realize that it provides us no guarantees that farm trucks aren't going to be inspected. We know that that's an impossibility. What it does do, in our view, is encourages qualified inspectors to look at the safety plan that's made up by ODOT and look at those statistics and conduct their inspection programs in accordance with that plan. And so we agree that organization and that planning effort is a good one, will best utilize state funds, and so we believe that that will be helpful for everybody.
And Mr. Delpondi is okay with this amendment?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannon, the Dash 3 amendment says that the commercial vehicle safety plan that I have always prepared and now will continue to prepare as a statutory direction that has guided my actions is going to now be used as a guide for the actions of law enforcement agencies that I do not supervise. So in that sense, it provides an argument of potential uniformity across the state for safety enforcement. What it's important to realize is that ODOT will not be the arbiter of any dispute between a local law enforcement agency and a motor carrier who believes the plan was not being adhered to. That dispute would be resolved between the aggrieved party and the local law enforcement agency involved.
So if I'm a farmer in, let's say, Redmond, and a state policeman stops me and wants to inspect my truck, my farm truck, and I feel that I'm aggrieved over what the inspection showed me on my truck and that there were some unrealistic demands placed upon me as a farmer to fix my vehicle based upon this inspection by state police. My beef is with the state police, not ODOT.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannon, you have the concept correct, except I have misled you. When I referred to my enforcement folks, I referred to both ODOT and any law enforcement agency with whom I contract through the NICSAC grant. Your example used OSP, so OSP is also guided by my plan. Had you selected the local Bend Police Department, your understanding is correct.
Oh, okay. So it's somebody outside the contractual basis. But your comfort level is okay with the A3 amendments?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Hannon, yes, sir.
Okay. Mr. Russell, are you okay?
Yes, sir. Can we have a motion to...
I'd move and work, Mr. Chairman.
Okay. Anyone else wants to testify on this bill? We'll close the public hearing on House Bill 2217, and we'll open a work session on House Bill 2217.
Mr. Chairman, I've moved the Dash A3 amendments to 2217.
Senator Hannon has moved the Dash A3 amendments to House Bill 2217. Discussion? Objection? Seeing none, motion passes.
Can I ask one question?
Yes.
Who do you represent, yourself or...
Short drivers.
Yeah, I know. I'm Carrie
Byron,
state representative, and I worked on this in the House of Transportation.
Oh, but you're okay. Would you like to
testify? Yeah,
pass
the bill, and I'll be great.
She's the local member, Senator Hannon, of the Short Drivers of America.
Oh, you're the president.
Don't.
Do we have a motion to?
Let's just say we see eye to eye.
Nicer way to put it.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move House Bill 2217 as amended out to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Hannon has moved House Bill 2217 as amended by the
over Senator Corcoran's eyesight.
I was going to vote for this.
As amended by the 8-3 amendments to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there a discussion? Is there objection? Seeing none, so ordered. And we will close the work session.
Can we have Senator Hannon carry it?
If Senator Hannon wishes, certainly Senator Hannon will carry it. We'll close the work session.
Will Dr. Yates help me carry the bill?
2217.
Sure.
And seeing no other business before us, we will adjourn the committee.